We're continuing to follow that mass shooting that left 14 people dead in San Bernardino, California. At a press conference today, an FBI official said that the motive is not yet known and that it would be premature to define the attack as terrorism. The suspects have been identified as 28-year-old Syed Rizwan Farouk and his wife, 27-year-old Tashfeen Malik. A federal official tells NPR's Kerry Johnson that Farouk had some electronic contact with people overseas who were on the radar of U.S. national security officials. Farouk was a 5-year employee of the San Bernardino County Department of Public Health. Police say he left an office holiday party yesterday at the Inland Regional Center and returned with Malik, both of them wearing tactical gear. So what are we supposed to do with all that information? Dr. Jonathan Metzl is professor of sociology and medicine, health and society at Vanderbilt University. He studies mass shootings and their effect on the broader public. Dr. Metzl, welcome.
Hi, it's nice to be here.
And how should we be processing this and these, because they are happening so frequently now?
Well, I think that there's a kind of almost patterned and understandable response in the aftermath of mass shootings. I think initially when mass shootings started to be part of our news cycle, there was a sense of kind of shock and horror and outrage. How could this be happening? And unfortunately now, with the increased frequency of these mass shootings, a mass shooting is basically happening almost every day in the United States, that there's a sense of learned helplessness in a way. People just feel, oh my gosh, there's nothing we can do to stop these mass shootings. It's just happening to us. And I think that was behind some of the comments that many of the politicians were making about, oh, what we need now is prayer. What we need to do is a kind of divine intervention, something like that. And on one hand, I do think that it's understandable why there is a sense of helplessness given the ways that mass shootings play out. But at the same time, I think that that sense of helplessness makes it harder for us to see how gun violence in America is the result of specific decisions we make and specific policies. And in that sense, I don't think we're as helpless as it feels.
But it does feel helpless to a lot of people. And is it wrong then for people who just want to tune it out, who want to turn off the news when it comes on?
Well, sure. I mean, that sense of helplessness, as I mentioned, is understandable for a number of reasons. One is that mass shootings, by definition, seem and feel, and in many ways are, incredibly random. These are events that are perpetrated by people who it's almost hard to predict. Very often in the aftermath of many kinds of mass shootings, you'll hear, well, that person was a recluse, they kept to themselves, but they weren't acting that much more strangely than anyone else. And in that regard, I think statistics bear this out. Mass shootings, for that reason, are incredibly, incredibly hard to predict. There is a sense of helplessness because we honestly don't know. And even I trained in psychiatry. I'm a psychiatrist. And psychiatrists are very, very statistically unable to predict which of their patients, even who come to see psychiatrists and threaten violence, are going to commit violence. And so in that sense, there is an understandable sense of helplessness. The problem, I think, with that formulation is that mass shootings are the times that we pay attention to gun crime in America. But what happens when we ask the question, how can we stop the mass shooting, is that it makes it harder for us to see that a much bigger problem in the United States based on trauma and deaths and lives lost is everyday violence in the United States. We have about 33 to 36,000 gun deaths a year in the United States. We're number one in the modern world in that regard. And I think that there are steps that we can do to stop everyday violence.
I want to ask you something else about the psychological aspect of this, which is when we hear the names of the alleged attackers come out, Syed Farouk and Tashfeen Malik, for a lot of people, something clicks and all of a sudden they assign a motive, and it has to do with radical Islamic terrorism because they hear those names. Is that logical? Is that something that is rational to do?
Well, what happens automatically in the aftermath of these events is that we search for some simple explanatory reason of why did this happen. And what happens then is that people jump to the very same stereotypes and assumptions that they use in their everyday lives. And so we see in the aftermath of mass shootings that are kind of done by white shooters that invariably we see the jump to, oh, this must be a lone wolf, a person with mental illness. If a person is of a particular background, as you suggest, we say, oh, it's terrorism or it's black on black crime. These are the same stereotypes that people use in everyday life. And part of this is a processing of something that is, you know, we want an easy answer to this. Unfortunately, what we see as we start to unpack what actually happened with mass shootings is that it's far, far more complicated than our stereotypes allow. And so the questions that we need to ask next are, where did this person get their guns? What was happening in their life? What was happening at their job, which I think is going to be probably important in this case. All these things that don't really play out in terms of somebody's particular racial or ethnic background, but are far more, I think, apt questions to ask to understand why something as terrible as this happened.
But in a way, it's more understandable if we can associate a motive to what's going on rather than something that we just don't understand. Why would somebody decide that they want to kill their coworkers or people that they know?
Sure, of course. I study mental illness in mass shootings, and I see this in the aftermath of mass shootings where mental illness appears to be the case. And so automatically people jump to, oh, because this person suffered from mental illness, that must have been the causal factor that promoted or caused this event to happen. And unfortunately, it's really that causal leap that gets us into trouble, because what we see is that even if somebody suffered from mental illness, there are many factors that are far more important to a question of why somebody did this than mental illness. And partially it's that mental illness doesn't cause mass shootings. There's no mental illness that causes violence toward other people. But the other factor, as I mentioned, is that there are a series of other questions about access to firearms, tensions in their life, alcohol and drugs, past history of violence. These are all factors that are far more correlated with mass shootings, or actually everyday shootings as well, than are these oversimplified racial or ethnic categories. And so we really need to be asking those questions, even if it's understandable that we jump to these automatic assumptions.
And to the person who doesn't feel safe today, who feels on edge, who is scared as they walk around the city, as they go about their normal daily routines, what would you say to that person?
Well, I think that that's understandable. I mean, part of what happens in the aftermath of terrorism and mass violence like this is what psychiatrists and psychologists call a massive kind of loss of innocence in a way. It's a sense that the places in the world that usually you shouldn't have to worry about threat, like movie theaters or schools or your workplace, places where you have many other things on your mind and you really don't have to worry about your own safety, all of a sudden, those everyday sites, those everyday spots become sites of peril. And in the aftermath of that, people have a very generalized sense of anxiety. Now, I think many psychiatric and psychological studies show that feeling of anxiety actually dissipates over time for people who aren't directly involved in a mass shooting. And so even though people might be suffering from what even might be called a kind of acute stress reaction to this, that for people who aren't directly involved in the shooting, it almost certainly won't go on to what's called post-traumatic stress disorder, that this will dissipate over time.
That's Dr. Jonathan Metzl, who's a professor of sociology and medicine, health, and society at Vanderbilt University. He studies mass shootings. Doctor, thank you very much.
Thanks so much.